Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Nina Welsh, our guest. I saw several pieces about her. Why I quit as a school librarian. Progressive activism is now the norm. And how does that work? Why? Why did the library change in that manner? She wrote, I can't pinpoint the exact moment I decided to quit my post as an assistant librarian at a private school, but it was probably when Anderson Press defended its decision to publish a book intended for under sevens that contained illustrations of men in Fetish Girl. When I saw the book Granddad's Pride by Harry Woodgate, to be ordered for the June's month-long Pride display, I quickly alerted them to the scandal. They didn't think it was so much of a scandal. So let's go to Nina Welsh from across the pond here on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Nina, welcome to Philadelphia. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me on, Dan.
Well, I think that accent improved the show right there.
Right, it's great.
Yes, it's not impenetrable. So, Nina, tell us about the private school you were working at, and didn't you pick up that granddad's pride might be a book they would welcome?
Yeah, so I say in my article that I wrote for Unheard that my school, the school library I worked for, is quite archetypal for all schools, really, or maybe not all, but an awful lot of schools, particularly private schools, for some reason. Librarians want to celebrate Pride Month, and that's understandable. And naturally, they'll order books that booksellers recommend, you know, that they seem to be on the hot list for books that you should share with children and teenagers, to improve their education and make them more tolerant, inclusive, whatever. But this one book, and make no mistake, like I had many books that I had massive aversions to before that for various reasons. But this one book had hit some headlines because the book was both written and illustrated by a person called Harry Woodgate, who uses they/them pronouns, the story of the book, as I understand it, is a little girl with her granddad who is bereaved from his boyfriend / long-term partner, and they go to Pride together. And in the book, there were illustrations of the Pride parade they attended, and I'm really not making this up. The illustrations contained two men caressing in quite a sexual manner in leather fetish gear. Now, my understanding is these illustrations were removed in some publications of the book, but overall, it was really heralded as this, put it this way, it's been shortlisted on a prize just as recently as a month ago in the UK, So it seemed to me really representative of this weird this weird thing that seems to be going in children's publishing, where you put a Pride Progress flag in front of a publisher's eyes and they just lose all their inhibitions.
Yeah, you also write here, too, why didn't I speak out about them all then, you know,
yes.
In your country? And there was something going on at the time. The Gender Recognition Reform Bill was not yet defeated. So what was the Gender Recognition Reform Bill?
Right. So in Scotland, there was a law that was, it was passed. Basically, the law stated that, so originally, for a person to legally change their gender, or that's to say, to legally change their sex, i.e. to be recognized in a different sex under the law, which would mean access to spaces of that sex, originally, I think we had quite a good balance. You had to live in your acquired gender for 2 years, whatever living in your gender means, really. You had to undergo a medical analysis, and you had to be over the age of 18. So the Scottish government had proposed this really quite unbelievable bill where they would shorten that to 3 months, remove any need for medical discussion, and it would be lowered to 16 years old, which basically meant that people, I suppose men with nefarious purposes, could very easily, all you had to say, basically the phrase that was used was self-ID. So the second a person says, I am this sex or I am this gender, that's it, no questions asked. So, you know, legally a man could say,
exactly.
I'm a woman. And in that second, under the law, he's a woman.
We're talking with Nina Welsh and this column today. And Nina, I wanted to ask you, you go into this, librarians in general, this is around the world, we've seen it in the United States. After you've exposed some of this, after you had to quit from this, the fetish gear and Pride Month, what is it, what's your sense of the change with librarians? It's one thing that the librarians not be seen as so-called old maids, just dusty books and all that. That was a good change of the image. But you talk about TikTok and librarians, and it's gone way beyond that into this activist type of thing.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk, and certainly in America as well, I know about this, about teachers who seem to be mistaking the role as being activists rather than, you know, teachers and pushing certain agendas. I think the interesting thing about a librarian is that a librarian is very similar to a teacher, but they don't have, you know, you don't mark papers. It's a really interesting role, the librarian. You're like a cross between a teacher and a friend, I'd almost say, you know, but you're still a figure of authority. And I mean, like I said, it might sound quite laughable because you think of the librarian as being, you know, this person at a cardigan stamping books at their desk. But there's a really interesting power in being a school librarian. You know, you decide the collection and you're sort of pushing certain morals and ideas and stories onto children. And something that I say in the article is I've noticed, and I don't say this with any, you know, I'm not saying this happily, but I think that mixture of power or status and nurture attracts, in particular, young progressive women who are particularly attracted to the sort of ideology behind this for those reasons. That mixture of power and nurture is something I think that needs more focus.
Yeah, no, it's a hotbed here in our suburbs, Nina. Several school districts even made national news around battles associated with this. What do you offer if you do, coming through this, writing about it, take a broad look at it, what's the solution to this, to stop this type of stuff? They have more balance, I'd say, here.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, where I live, so United Kingdom, but I'm specifically in Scotland, the thing is, this is a top-down problem, you know, because this is what I say in the article that I wrote. as a school librarian, I could take up a fight with libraries, but beyond this, this is a fight with children's publishing, you know, and both of them are quite interlinked. It's going to take, and I think we're already seeing signs of this in America, a huge grassroots movement of parents, teachers, and librarians coming together until this is no longer a fringe issue. And, you know, what does pain me with children's literature is, you know, I am so passionate about children being exposed to books that challenge them. That's important in childhood, you know, that disturb them, that educate them. But there's just been this complete abdication of common sense in children's publishing. You know, I never thought I'd be the person saying, we need to, I hate using this word, but, you know, we need to really take a look at not censoring, but maybe, removing certain books from the library collection. I never thought I'd be the person saying that, but there's just been this complete abdication of common sense, and activists posturing as authors. It's not even, I mean, even the most liberal person should surely agree that feeding deliberate untruths to children through literature, feeding really sordid imagery deliberately to children, you know, as I've said, if you're asking for a solution, it's just going to take a huge, it's not going to be easy, it's not going to be overnight, but just parents, teachers, and librarians coming together. And basically, I mean, in the UK, I said you basically need an inquiry into children's publishing at this point. And maybe you need that in America, too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Nina, thank you. Why I Quit as a School Librarian, Progressive Activism is Now Considered the Norm. Nina, thank you. Thanks for taking the time, and thanks for the delightful accent. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Dan.
All right, Nina Welsh here from Scotland on Talk Radio 1210. And with Pride Month upon us, look, we've talked about Lawn Boy before. Dan, what's the other one that you often bring up? Lawn Boy is the one that always gets me.
There's Genderqueer, but it's not.
Yeah, Genderqueer.
That's not the one I'm thinking of. There.
But this one with Granddad in fetish gear, etc., and recommended for under 7. She hit upon it. Children's publishing is going to go where they think these librarians and others are going to buy these books, propagate this. They have a built-in audience. And it's just insidious of all the elements associated with this. We'll have more on it as it continues. James Biden is the guy, too, I would be trying to go after here. This guy crawls with all the corruption and business deals that we routinely talk about, not just Joe Biden. So Republicans have at least done that. You could argue, well, don't they do more? Well, trying to get through the Department of Justice is very difficult at this point. So I can't fault them on that. That just coming down. Now, on the good news front, we had on Captain Sean Parnell, who now is heading up a consortium. It seems to be 3 or 4 major groups across Pennsylvania. They're funded. They may spend $20 million, I'm told, maybe more, in order to get some degree of parity with Democrats when it comes to early voting, mail-in balloting, and reaching people. In fact, I wrote it down. He told me that in the last election, and he said, look, we know all the nonsense that happened here in Pennsylvania. I'm not saying Biden won fair and square. But on paper, he won by 80,000 votes. He talked about those that voted 4 out of 4 out of the last 4 elections, or 3 out of 4, 100,000 of them did not show up and vote, though, that were Republicans. These are 4 for 4 of the previous elections, and 3 out of 4, they did not show up and vote. So it tells us Democrats are banking their votes. We know about the election integrity part. And then, I just found this out late last night, he was able to convince, along with Don Jr. and apparently Laura Trump, he talked about that in the interview, President Trump to cut this ad that he claimed you're going to be seeing. They're targeting Republican voters who are open to Trump. And he said Trump is a wild card. There are all kinds of voters open to him. Look at the fundraising. Look at the rallies. But do they come out and vote? Something always happens. They're just not used to voting. We heard this in 2016. And Trump got enough to get over the finish line. So here's President Trump. And if this is widely publicized, I think it's a top moment in winning in 2024. Here's the new ad with President Trump talking about early voting, mail-in ballots, absentee, call it what you will.
From the very first day that we take back the White House from crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of our country, I believe that we're going to have four of the greatest years in the history of our country. I will once and for all secure our elections. We're going to go to paper ballots. We're going to have same-day voting, voter ID. We're going to do it properly. We're going to have good, secure, beautiful elections. We never want what happened in 2020 to happen again. But until then, Republicans must win. And we must use every appropriate tool available to beat the Democrats. They are destroying our country. Whether you vote early, absentee, by mail or in person, we are going to protect the vote. That's the most important thing we have to do, is protect the vote. Keep your eyes open, because these people want to cheat, and they do cheat. And frankly, it's the only thing they do well. We will make sure your ballot is secure and your voice is heard. Many Republicans like to vote on Election Day, and we must swamp the radical Democrats with massive turnout on Tuesday, November 5th. The way you win is to swamp them. If we swamp them, they can't cheat. It just doesn't work out. But if you can't make it, you need to make a plan, register, and vote any way possible. We got to get your vote. So with your vote, we will win a victory the likes of which no one has ever seen before. We will evict crooked Joe Biden from the White House, and we will take back our country on November 5th, 2024, the most important day in the history of our country. That's what it's going to go down as. Thank you.
All right. That's President Trump. Now, that's just last night that that was started to be put out there. I'd love to get your reaction to it. What do you say when you have Trump now? And again, I think this ad, I'd put a lot of money into it, widespread enough, maybe even talking in more detail about
going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream.
Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
About election security that he promised here, it is secure. Sean Parnell is a favorite of his, didn't run for office ultimately, but is quarterbacking this, was with us. That'll be up on podcast. And he and I went back and forth with some of the figures they have, just moving the needle, maybe anywhere from 5 to 7 or 8 percentage points of Republican improvement on mail-in balloting, and you're going to win Pennsylvania. What happens if it doesn't move that much? Then it's up in the air. What happens if it moves very little? Then you lose. That's what's going to happen here. Despite all the issues, despite a million other things, the metrics are all great. The polling post the verdict shows minimal lack of movement away from Trump, if at all. It shows on the intensity meter, the base and Republicans in general, enormous for Trump. It shows the fundraising. We know about the rallies. The only missing thing is the most important thing of all. voting. And this is the one thing, Trump just said it, he's right, the one thing they're good at. They've been on top of this. They are maniacal on this because they know that's how they're planning to win. Aside from the other challenges, and that division is the defense side, the election integrity side. So is your reaction, you're still not believing it? What source would you hear that would say, yeah, this is what you have to do to win? If not the guy who risked not only not becoming president, but all these legal cases that won't go away, they're not going to stop if he loses. Endorsing this, saying it's secure. What more do you need? Don Jr., apparently, Sean Parnell told us, had a lot to do with this. Laura Trump has been public on this. Whatley, the RNC guy, who they put in for election integrity extraordinaire, they're on it. It doesn't mean that the other side rolls away and they won't stop it. We know that. We know here in Philadelphia, we're one of the capitals of this. But it means this time around, we're much ahead of the game. And if people take to this, I mean, they might spend $20 million just on mail-in balloting and things related to it, Republicans here in Pennsylvania. But they need Trump even a little bit more. He's on Fox tonight in a big interview. And I hope he says it. I hope he talks about the ad. I hope they show it. Do you reject that, even if it's Trump? Do you say, I don't want to hear that? I don't think people should do that. Do you reject the logic of it? Is it the security of it? You have him vouching for that. Let's see where it goes. Let's see how national they make this. All right, phone lines are 855-839-1210. That's how you get in. AT&T and Verizon Wireless. All you have to do is just push pound 1210. We honor tomorrow, June 6th, 80 years later. That's the side question today. Saving Private Ryan. Tough to watch those opening scenes. Brutal on the beach. Hit us with something impactful, but tough to watch. Dan had several. I had several. Yours are open. Here's your chance to get in with them. But on the mail-in ballots, what do you say back to President Trump on this? What's your response to this? He's pivoted. I had a guy say, well, why did he take this number of years? All right. We're here now, though. Now it just has to be more widespread. That's the thing that has to happen. If it is more widespread, we're going to win. If it's not, it's in doubt. That's the way I see it. Do you think I'm telling you something? Just as it's obvious what's in front of me. The beauty of this is we know something. We're not guessing. We know what the facts are here of what's going to happen. And we'll be able to tell you on election day when we start to see the numbers of how the mail-in balloting has gone about where we stand. Because we know we're going to beat them on election day. That's a given. But people are well-meaning, and then they don't show up and vote. I don't get that. I mean, unless you're, you know, something just unbelievably severe. Some people won't wait in line. They run out of ballots. There's a tornado. All these things add up. It's razor close in Pennsylvania. Razor close. This time more than the last. I'm betting it's going to be under the number we had the last time, the winner in Pennsylvania. But it's definitely doable. If you missed the first part of the show, too, this Biden immigration executive order going into play and not much happening around it. The best analogy today we were able to find. This is from the immigration studies group. They're the real anti-illegal immigration over the last 20 years. And they say, how did they come up with 2,500 to be the limit? Probably they sat in a room with focus groups and they're asking these people in swing states and they're trying to get to a number before these people go wild and would reject it of what is going to be allowed in. Our job is to let the American people, Dan and I, the number we arrived at, that still would be on paper, 910,000 a year, they're guaranteeing to come in. So really, with gotaways and all, it still would be 1.2, 1.5 million people is what they're talking about. The other analogy is this. The article I read today cites one of these progressive DAs, this one in Fairfax, Virginia. He has a policy. He's not going to do anything, even if he's going to let it on the books. If you're caught shoplifting under $1,000. Now, with Krasner, it's under $500, but under $1,000. Just think of some of the things that might be on sale. Dan, it was a big screen TV, or relatively big, right?
$9.99. Yeah.
You could just wheel that out. And
roll
say,
back
hey,
deal,
you
Dom.
Can't take that out. Why not? It's under $1,000.
Get him out. Get him out of here.
So Biden is doing the same exact thing. What I'm saying is, we got to work overtime here on illustrating to people that this is nothing. It's still enormous, despite what they're touting, because it helps them versus what they were doing, at least marginally. That's why they're doing it. All right, so 855-839-1210. This Trump clip, let me know the first time you see it. We were told by Sean Parnell, who's the quarterback of all these groups coming together around this with millions of dollars. This is the first guy and the first people that got President Trump to do this. It's one thing to drop something on Truth Social. It's another to cut. And it was classic Trump. He pivots and then he tells you why you got to do this if you want to get these other things done. I'm fine with that. Will it motivate people to say, yeah, and I'm going to tell other people, bank the vote, do that. You never know what happens. I can't answer why these people are so gung-ho. The fundraising's incredible. The rallies are incredible. But do they actually vote in the end? The other side, you got these tepid Democrats who don't even want to show up on election day, but they're banking the vote. They're good at it. And we don't even have to beat them at this. We're beating them at the other things. We have to do two things. One, do better at this. And two, all out. And I think there's signs the Trump campaign is doing this to protect the vote, election integrity. Now, there's always more that can be done, but they're on it this time more than the last. That's the defense. The offense is mail-in balloting. All right, Frank in Jersey. He's next on Talk Radio 1210. Hello, Frank. Welcome in. Yo, Frank, are you there? All right, Frank, call us back, 855-839-1210. So think on the border. This is very much akin to these progressive DAs and what they're doing with something like shoplifting. That's exactly what Biden is doing here. And how do you pick the number 2,500? Well, they're trying to play with the mind that they're lowering it. This is a reasonable number. They're really cracking down. Republicans won't help them. We have to do some of this for asylum. And when you look at that shows on paper, it's over 900,000 people. In addition to the gotaways, it's well over a million still. So we're going to withstand it. I have a piece here today that talks about, I think this was the Washington Post even. Yeah. That in Washington, D.C., the number of families arriving in D.C. with children in need of immediate support has increased more rapidly than anticipated by anybody. And what this means is emails between D.C. public school officials are offering a glimpse into the strain placed on schools in Washington, D.C. as the sanctuary city struggles to handle an influx of migrants illegally into the nation's capital. The emails obtained by our buddies, Parents Defending Education via the FOIA Act, shared with Fox News, show a number of challenges. The numbers were rising. Governor Abbott, they talk about the continued need of support for language. They talked about overcrowded classrooms. Multiple grades were full, could not hold additional students. They said that one email warned that one school had received an influx of English language learner students who do not speak English, and the teachers need support with strategies to support our scholars. Yeah, right, scholars. So here is a little bit more on this issue. Again, this is prime real estate here for Trump to develop. And here is, Cavuto. One thing Neil Cavuto does on Fox, very little, but he gets on Mayorkas. Listen to this exchange where even Neil Cavuto is telling him drug cartels are going to be able to use the so-called unaccompanied children. They're still in here. They're going to be able to come here on their own. And how are they going to do that? Here's Cavuto.
So the one thing I didn't understand, Secretary, there are a number of exemptions for this, including, unaccompanied children. And isn't that a green light for drug cartels to take advantage of that? And, the whole purpose of this, it sort of blows up in your face.
Oh, absolutely not,
Neil. But who's going to watch those unaccompanied children? They are allowed in. You don't ship them back. You don't do anything like that. So where do they go?
We deal with unaccompanied children in a humanitarian way, adhering to our values. We deter irregular migration. We build lawful pathways.
But this encourages drug cartels to take advantage of those kids, does it not, sir?
Neil, we're taking it to the drug cartels with unprecedented strength through our transnational criminal investigative units.
No, this is actually a green light for those cartels. Isn't that the fear, that this was actually green lighting and say, oh, God, that we can use these kids as pawns to get what we want?
Neil, let's be clear. The cartels, the smuggling organizations, are unscrupulous. They exploit individuals of all different types of vulnerabilities. We are taking it to the cartels. We accepted unaccompanied children from this asylum bar because of the compelling humanitarian picture they present.
All right, let me get a better...
We're going to adhere to our values.
Okay.
We're going to adhere to our values while we take tough enforcement measures, which is what we have done.
All right. Well, first of all, stop using unaccompanied children. It's unaccompanied minors. The children makes you think these are very young. Often that's not the case. They're minors. Some of them are. So, again, Republicans have to be, this is their moment on this phony thing to shine, to find something that reaffirms to the American people what a scam this is. Here is Senator Kennedy, the all-time best. This guy, I would just say, hey, you're going to have to come into our office an hour each day. We're going to take this guy's brain apart. He's the funniest guy out there. Listen to what he compares Biden's polling status to when it comes to this issue of the border.
Okay, I want you to listen up. Here's the drill. President Biden is in trouble politically. He's polling right up there with fungal infections. Part of the reason for that is that he gave in to the loon wing of his party. And he dissolved the southern border. Now, 5 months before an election, he has to appear to be willing to do something about it, hence this executive order. And he expects you to report this epiphany that he has had, take what the White House is telling you, balance it on your noses like trained seals, and report it uncritically.
Absolutely. And it's our job to find out things like the shoplifting thing as an example, and other examples of exactly what this scam is. Where did they come up with 2,500? Why is 2,500 the magic number? Tell me more about the 2,500. What's the metric behind that? Is it like a Fauci 6-foot thing? You just arrived at it, you made it up, you focus grouped it? That's what has to be done. Not bad by Neil Cavuto, but he could have jumped in a little bit more. He won't get Mayorkas back on, but at least he played it out with them. Yeah, what about the unaccompanied minors? All right, lightning round is next.
The time has come for the final test.
We usually call it the lightning round.
Yes, that's right. All right, June 6th tomorrow. 80 years, we're talking about something impactful, the great Saving Private Ryan. Hit us with an impactful scene from a film. Let's go to Drew in Upper Darby. And Drew, congrats the other day with the Angela Lansbury thing. That was perfectly entertaining and outside the box.
Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. I got lucky. I guess I slept on a Holiday Inn Express last night. Hey, Dom, what makes this scene so impactful and disturbing is that in real life, these two actresses really resented each other. And in the movie, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, with Betty Davis, her sister's paralyzed, who's Joan Crawford, and she feeds her her dinner, and Joan Crawford lifts up the plate lid, and there's a dead rat on the plate.
Yes.
It's hard to watch.
Well, that is in the top five all-time public figure feuds. I mean, I don't know which one is worse, because Mommy Dearest, of course, is Joan Crawford.
Yes, yes, yes. It's disturbing. Thanks.
They were playing something that they actually would do it to each other. They were the two biggest actresses of the year, and they hated each other beyond belief. Betty Davis eyes.
That's a fantastic answer again.
That's a good one. Earl of Tacony, the Earl. Earl, what's yours?
My answer was originally cut from the original American release, but it's been reintegrated in, and now anytime you try to screen the movie, you're going to see this scene in the extended version. It's from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where Tuco is walking Blondie through the impassable desert, through the devil's frying pan, and there's no shade, and Blondie's all got sun poisoning, and he's just, you know, dying of thirst. And as he's laying there in the desert, a boot comes in front of his face, and he grabs the boot thinking he's going to kill Tuco. Well, Tuco took off his boot and filled it full of water. And Blondie has to think, do I drink the water out of his boot or do I die of thirst? And even before he has a chance to drink the water out of his boot, Tuco kicks the boot over and spills the water all over the sand.
All right. And I know Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Excellent, though. Bruce in the Northeast. Hey, Bruce, what's yours today?
Hey, Dom, this is really cringeworthy. I remember I watched it live on television, the Miss Teen USA pageant, and that poor girl got up there and she just stumbled and fell apart in front of the whole nation.
Miss South Carolina.
Yeah, it was something.
Junior Miss, Dan. And it's a guy, it's Mario,
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and
the Iraq.
I wonder what she's doing today. Probably running for Congress some point. Richard in Somerdale. Let's get Richard in. All right, Richard, what's yours?
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, how about World Trade Center? It's a Oliver Stone movie about 9/11,
right,
with Nicolas Cage and Michael Peña, and they are going to the tower after the first tower collapsed, and they're there, and they arrive just in time on the scene for the second tower, and they get buried under the rubble, and they were under there for 14 hours, and they were rescued by a couple Marines.
Thank you, Richard. I would say, Dan, the French documentary, people jumping off the building, what's that thought? That's people jumping from the 99th floor. They felt they were better off than what was going on there.
Miss South Carolina Teen USA is now a two-kid mom and a real estate agent out in Los Angeles. Successful, too, so landed on her feet.
Would you buy real estate from her? Oh, my goodness.
So I'll throw that one in there. Bruce in the Northeast is a finalist. Good, Bad, and Ugly. I like Earl's. Drew in Upper Darby, who won yesterday with another great call, though, with the feud, the behind the scenes of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
Tell me your winner.
I might have to go with Drew.
All right, I go with that. Was a great one. They both hate a rat right there. That's an old film, too, but that is a classic. All right, Drew goes into the hat here.
Dom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3, from Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.
Biden is doing here. And how do you pick the number 2,500? Well, they're trying to play with the mind that they're lowering it. This is a reasonable number. They're really cracking down. Republicans won't help them. We have to do some of this for asylum. And when you look at that shows on paper, it's over 900,000 people. In addition to the gotaways, it's well over 1 million still. So we're going to withstand it. I have a piece here today that talks about, I think this was a Washington Post even. Yeah, that in Washington, D.C., the number of families arriving in D.C. with children in need of immediate supports has increased more rapidly than anticipated by anybody. And what this means is emails between D.C. public school officials are offering a glimpse into the strain placed on schools in Washington, D.C. as the sanctuary city struggles to handle an influx of migrants illegally into the nation's capital. The emails obtained by our buddies, Parents Defending Education via the FOIA Act, shared with Fox News, show a number of challenges. The numbers were rising. Governor Abbott, they talk about the continued need of support for language. They talked about overcrowded classrooms. Multiple grades were full, could not hold additional students. They said that one email warned that one school had received an influx of English language learner students who do not speak English, and the teachers need support with strategies to support our scholars. Yeah, right, scholars. So here is a little bit more on this issue. Again, this is prime real estate here for Trump to develop. And here is, Cavuto. One thing Neil Cavuto does on Fox, very little, but he gets on Mayorkas. Listen to this exchange where even Neil Cavuto is telling him drug cartels are going to be able to use the so-called unaccompanied children. They're still in here. They're going to be able to come here on their own. And how are they going to do that? Here's Cavuto.
So the one thing I didn't understand, Secretary, there are a number of exemptions for this, including, unaccompanied children. And isn't that a green light for drug cartels to take advantage of that? And, the whole purpose of this, it sort of blows up in your face.
Oh, absolutely not.
Who's going to watch those unaccompanied children? If they are allowed in, you don't ship them back. You don't do anything like that. So where do they go?
We deal with unaccompanied children in a humanitarian way, adhering to our values. We deter irregular migration. We build lawful pathways.
But this encourages drug cartels to take advantage of those kids, does it not, sir?
Neil, we're taking it to the drug cartels with unprecedented strength through our transnational criminal investigative units.
No, this is actually a green light for those cartels. Isn't that the fear, that this was actually green lighting and say, oh, God, that we can use these kids as pawns to get what we want?
Neil, let's be clear. The cartels, the smuggling organizations, are unscrupulous. They exploit individuals of all different types of vulnerabilities. We are taking it to the cartels. We accepted unaccompanied children from this asylum bar because of the compelling humanitarian picture they present.
All right, let me get a better...
We're going to adhere to our values.
Okay.
We're going to adhere to our values while we take tough enforcement measures, which is what we have done.
All right. Well, first of all, stop using unaccompanied children. It's unaccompanied minors. The children makes you think these are very young. Often that's not the case. They're minors. Some of them are. So, again, Republicans have to be, this is their moment on this phony thing to shine, to find something that reaffirms to the American people what a scam this is. Here is Senator Kennedy, the all-time best. This guy, I would just say, hey, you're going to have to come into our office an hour each day. We're going to take this guy's brain apart. He's the funniest guy out there. Listen to what he compares Biden's polling status to when it comes to this issue of the border.
Okay, I want you to listen up. Here's the drill. President Biden is in trouble politically. He's polling right up there with fungal infections. Part of the reason for that is that he gave in to the loon wing of his party, and he dissolved the southern border. Now, 5 months before an election, he has to appear to be willing to do something about it, hence this executive order. And he expects you to report this epiphany that he has had, take what the White House is telling you, balance it on your noses like trained seals, and report it uncritically.
Absolutely. And it's our job to find out things like the shoplifting thing as an example, and other examples of exactly what this scam is. Where did they come up with 2,500? Why is 2,500 the magic number? Tell me more about the 2,500. What's the metric behind that? Is it like a Fauci 6-foot thing? You just arrived at it, you made it up, you focus grouped it? That's what has to be done. Not bad by Neil Cavuto, but he could have jumped in a little bit more. He won't get Mayorkas back on, but at least he played it out with them. Yeah, what about the unaccompanied minors? All right, lightning round is next.
The time has come for the final test.
We usually call it the lightning round.
Yes, that's right. All right, June 6th tomorrow, 80 years. We're talking about something impactful. The great Saving Private Ryan hit us with an impactful scene from the film. Let's go to Drew in Upper Darby. And Drew, congrats the other day with the Angela Lansbury thing. That was perfectly entertaining and outside the box.
Thanks. Thanks, Tom. I got lucky. I guess I slept at a Holiday Inn Express last night. Hey, Tom, what makes this scene so impactful and disturbing is that in real life, these two actresses really resented each other. And in the movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, with Betty Davis, her sister's paralyzed, who's Joan Crawford, and she feeds her dinner, and Joan Crawford lifts up the plate lid, and there's a dead rat on the plate.
Yes.
It's hard to watch.
Well, that is in the top five all-time public figure feuds. I mean, I don't know which one is worse, because Mommy Dearest, of course, is Joan Crawford.
Yes, yes, yes. It's disturbing. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, they were playing something that they actually would do it to each other. They were the two biggest actresses of the year, and they hated each other beyond belief. Betty Davis eyes.
That's a fantastic answer again.
That's a good one. Earl of Tacony, the Earl. Earl, what's yours?
My answer was originally cut from the original American release, but it's been reintegrated in, and now anytime you try to scream the movie, you're going to see this scene in the extended version. It's from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where Tuco is walking Blondie through the impassable desert, through the devil's frying pan, and there's no shade, and Blondie's all got sun poisoning, and he's just, you know, dying of thirst. And as he's laying there in the desert, a boot comes in front of his face, and he grabs the boot thinking he's going to kill Tuco. Well, Tuco took off his boot and filled it full of water. And Blondie has to think, do I drink the water out of his boot or do I die of thirst? And even before he has a chance to drink the water out of his boot, Tuco kicks the boot over and spills the water all over the sand.
All right. And I know Good, Bad, and the Ugly. Excellent, though. Bruce in the Northeast. Hey, Bruce, what's yours today?
Hey, Tom, this is really cringeworthy. I remember I watched it live on television, the Miss Teen USA pageant, and that poor girl got up there and she just stumbled and fell apart in front of the whole nation.
Miss South Carolina.
Yeah, it was something.
Junior Miss, Dan. And it's a guy, it's Mario,
Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and
the Iraq.
I wonder what she's doing today. Probably running for Congress at some point. Richard in Somerdale. Let's get Richard in. All right, Richard, what's yours?
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, how about World Trade Center? It's a Oliver Stone movie about 9/11 with Nicolas Cage and Michael Pena. And they are going to the tower after the first tower collapsed, and they're there, and they arrive just in time on the scene for the second tower, and they get buried under the rubble. And they were under there for 14 hours, and they were rescued by a couple Marines.
Thank you, Richard. I would say, Dan, the French documentary, people jumping off the building, what's that thud? That's people jumping from the 99th floor. they felt they were better off than what was going on there.
Miss South Carolina Teen USA is now a two-kid mom and a real estate agent out in Los Angeles. Successful, too, so landed on her feet.
Would you buy real estate from her? Oh, my goodness.
So I'll throw that one in there. Bruce in the Northeast is a finalist. Good, bad, and ugly. I like Earls. Drew in Upper Darby, who won yesterday with another great call, though, with the feud, the behind the scenes of whatever happened to Baby Jane.
Tell me your winner.
I might have to go with Drew.
All right, I go with that. Was a great one. They both hate a rat right there. That's an old film, too, but that is a classic. All right, Drew goes into the hat here.
Dom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3 from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.